Hello, welcome to Roaming Holiday, my fucking... Hello, welcome to Roaming Holiday, my travel podcast. So, in 2024, I had a transfer through the airport in Shanghai, an overnight transfer that was a real to-do, man. It was different than any other airport I'd ever been to, as far as security and hoops you gotta jump through and bureaucracy and just the ever-present feeling of threat and dictatorial power. Very unpleasant. I've never been to an airport like that ever, except in 2019 when I ended up staying overnight at the airport in Moscow. It was actually a lot like that. The two situations were very similar. And I thought that was very interesting, so I was going to do a podcast about the experience of passing through China as opposed to the experience of passing through Russia. However, the China part of the story took longer than I expected. So that was actually last episode of this podcast. If you missed that, you can go grab the episode before this and get caught up. Or if you're only interested in the Russia side, here we are. So in this case, even though it was 2024 that I went through the airport in China, I actually went through the Russian airport in 2019, before the situation with the Ukraine. And I didn't have a travel podcast back then, but I did have a writing podcast. I had a podcast about writing a novel. So I took a break from talking about writing novels so I could record my experiences going through Russia because it was so... it stood out. Let's just put it that way. It was a unique experience. So that's what this audio is from. I'm going to edit it together, take out any references to the old book podcast, just make it a travel story. But this is the on-the-ground, in real-time experience of passing through Russia in 2019. And I think it's a pretty good story. Frankly, I think it's a better story than the China one. More interesting, more weird, more stuff that, let's just get into it. So, all right, let's take it away. Me from 2019, flying from Amsterdam to Tokyo through Moscow. Test, test, hello, hello. Welcome to How to Write a Novel. I am in an obscure corner of a weird foreign airport, and I got an hour and a half to kill, so let's try and do a podcast and see how weird this is. Let's see if I can do this without the Russian Federation taking me down. So yeah, I'm in Russia. So one of the fun things about traveling outside of North America that I didn't really know, because North America is not much you can do. You just kind of take whatever flights they give you, and you can, you know, use certain amounts of transfers and alterations you can make, but not a serious amount. Like, I just didn't realize in the rest of the world how many airlines there are and how much shit is going on. It's crazy. So, like, this flight to Japan, it's like $500 one way, which is maybe $550. You know, not like amazing, but pretty good because it goes through Moscow, from Amsterdam to Moscow. And there was one that was even cheaper. The cheapest one I could find was $400, but it was like a 27-hour, or was it? There was one I think that was a 44-hour trip, like just these long layovers, which is crazy and weird. And I could see doing it for like a reality show, but not for actual life. That would be insane. This one, pretty good. 3.5-hour flight to Moscow, and then a 9.5-hour flight to Japan. You know, that's pretty rough. Not what I wanted to do in one day, but hey, whatever. You got to get to Japan somehow, right? And unfortunately, man, I was good the whole month. I got so sick. Crazy sick my last weekend in Amsterdam, where it was just like... hit me real fast, and it was just like no energy. I didn't leave my room for 2 days. I can't remember the last time I've done that. Then I get into Russia, and the flight was late leaving Amsterdam, which I didn't really think twice about, because it's like, whatever, I've never had a plane leave on me. They always just hang around. They just wait, whatever. It's weird. It's like, how traveling, how, you know, obviously the first thing you notice are the stereotypes and how true they are on the surface. Obviously, this is, I've been in Russia for fucking a few hours and it's just the airport, but right away you do notice stuff like, there's the efficiency of stuff like, this flight is going to leave. We're not waiting. This flight's leaving. Fuck it. We're going. This is the time on the ticket. You be there or you go fuck yourself. But at the same time, there's the inefficiency of getting through the airport. Getting from point A to point B is so slow and so badly designed and badly organized, and nobody gives a fuck. These dour ass workers are just like, you're on your own, buddy. Good luck. Oh, you didn't make it? Well, hey, whatever. We're all in Russia. What do you want? You know? So basically, though, I kind of got my wish because I was like, I don't want to do this 9.5 hour flight. I don't want to do it. And then when I get to Tokyo, I get there at like 10:30, but my Airbnb is not available till 4:30 in the afternoon. So I still got a whole day I got to dick around. I'm just not in any condition to do this. So when the lady at the little desk, which was, you should have seen this thing, man. It's like, imagine Papers, Please, that video game, except everybody rushes at once. The lineup doesn't move one at a time. But that same kind of tone. But yeah, just this gaggle of people, this rush of people going through this shit. It's all disorganized and crazy. But I managed to get to the little lady who was supposed to tell me if I had any hope in hell of catching my flight, which I did not. It was leaving in like 10 minutes. And once I saw, yeah, the bureaucratic nightmare of getting to the other side of the airport, fucking, yeah, there was no chance. So, yeah, this lady, maybe part of it is just the famous Canadian politeness. I mean, as you can hear, I think I'm in a pretty good mood, all things considered. Like, it's pretty tough. I'm never in a great mood. But it's pretty hard for me to really be in a bad mood. Things really got to go bad. And yeah, Canadian politeness or whatever. But I don't know if this lady had ever seen someone so accommodating to being told that they had to get rebooked to a new flight tomorrow. Because like, I was like, thank you. This is great, actually. I don't want to fly today. I just want to try to fucking shit my brains out for the next 24 hours and hopefully get a little past this. And do this again, like, split this trip up. That's all I want. It's what I want more than anything. It's like, I already did a trip today. I did it. I don't need to do another one. It's insane to even contemplate. So yeah, again, literally so disorganized and so weird. She just scribbled some stuff on my ticket and just said, go through there, go through this passport control thing, go figure out what you're doing with your life. You know, really not helpful per se. Not rude, though. Just not helpful. But I was like, that's good, man. Whatever. Whatever. We'll sort it out. Some kind of, I heard her talking to a guy before me, something about a hotel. I'm like, that's, I'll take it. This is perfect. This is yes, 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 yes. 100 times yes. This is what I want. Go fucking take a day off before my crazy nightmare flight. Because it would have sucked at the best of times, but then something like this happens and it's like, Jesus fucking Christ. It's horrible. It's horrible. You know, people misuse the word literally, but I think this is literally a nightmare to have to just shit all the time or to be sick or just then you're stuck on a plane and everything is just like constrained and ugh. I mean, again, we're talking by modern standards. It's not like someone's whipping me to make a pyramid here, you know. I'm keeping it in context, but by modern standards, this sucks. I'm glad it didn't happen. So anyway, then I shuffled through the weird fucking airport, and I finally got to the nice part of the airport, you know, where all the stores and stuff are. And on the surface, I'm like, oh, look at this. It's like a normal airport, except, you know, it's Cyrillic writing everywhere, and, the nice part of the airport is betrayed by the bathrooms. Man, you go to the bathroom, it's fucking horrible. There's just cigarettes put out everywhere. So then I was like, all right, I don't even quite know where to go. I'll just wander around till I ask somebody to figure out where to go, to figure out what to do about this fucking flight and the hotel booking and stuff. And as I was walking around, I saw these little capsules. There's like six of them. It's like a little capsule hotel thing like you see in Japan sometimes, except not a nice Japanese one where it's all nice and quiet and everything is laid out in this nice place and you just go into this building and go in your little capsule and go to bed. These are just in the middle of the main thoroughfare of the fucking Russian
goddamn airport. The Moscow airport. I think it's called Sherbet, because it sounds like sherbet. And I was like, that seems a little bit, again, somewhat akin to a nightmare. Especially in my state I was in at that point, where I was super dehydrated, just really feeling bad in the gut, just tired. Just everything was all fucked up. I'm like, God, imagine just having to climb into one of those. So I eventually found the place I had to go to talk to the lady about ticketing stuff. And again, there's one lady, a huge line, one lady. I was there for like 45 minutes at least, just standing there wondering, like, am I going to have to lose my place in line? Because I might have to just go shit. I might have to. I managed to make it. I'm on the mend, I think. But it was a little touch and go there. Real long wait. Again, it's like where I'm just like, yeah, I can do this. This is fine. I don't mind. I'm polite. I'm nice. It's fine. It's cool. And then eventually it just hits a point where it's like, what is happening? This is just too long. How come there's only one person? And the line behind me is just getting longer and longer. It's like, get the fuck out of here, you fucking Russian fucks. You know, have some sense of customer service a little. Get one other person. What the fuck, you know? Like, there's a point where it's not okay anymore. Your dour attitude and your stupid culture, I'm already turning against you after fucking 2 hours. But I heard the lady say, like, oh, five of you. Okay, well, here's what we're going to do. It's like 7:45. I'll set up some stuff. You come back here a little after 10 p.m. because then it's like, oh, we've hit nighttime. And that's when we send people off to the hotels, because otherwise it's those capsules. But you won't have to really do the capsules because there's five of you. There's too many. But that made me think, like, oh, wait a minute. So it's still relatively early evening and I'm just me. I'm just by myself. Am I going to get put in a capsule? It's like, oh no, my dream came true that I wouldn't have to fly today, but now my nightmare is coming true. But I started getting used to the idea a little bit. I'm like, hey, you know what? Maybe that would be cool. At this point, whatever. Give me the capsule. Let me just go lock myself in this weird little thing and just let me pass out. I guess I'll have to get out every couple hours and stumble through the airport to go shit and go back to my capsule. Like, it's going to be ridiculous, but hey, you know what? Maybe that'd be cool. Maybe that's a story, right? The fucking capsule in the fucking Russian airport. But when they finally got to me, I didn't have to do the capsule. And I just have to do the wait till 10 o'clock and come back for hotel assignment. But yes, but that's cool. Like, this has all basically worked out pretty well because this is what I like. Like I was saying how I don't do tourism stuff. I don't go see shit because I don't give a fuck. What I like is stuff like this. Like, I like, that's why I want to try to break up my future traveling into smaller, slower bits. I like to go slow and I like to spend time in places. Like, it was weird that I stayed at this Airbnb for a whole fucking month in Amsterdam, in Oud-Doorn. Probably no one's ever done that before for that guy. And even when I booked my place in Tokyo, the lady commented, like, 47 days. Wow, that doesn't usually happen because, you know, it's just travelers. And I'm like, yeah, I want to be in it, man. I want to soak it in. So this, what is happening right now, this is exactly what I want. Like, I can't really imagine coming to Moscow. That's never been on my radar because, like, what do? I just go hang out at coffee shops and stuff. Is this really the place I would come to go do that? I don't know. It just seems weird. But hanging out at the airport, perfect. This is exactly what I want. Just this evening of hanging out, just soaking in the airport, you know? It's the least Russia experience you could ever have. But you just notice little things. Like, I love how you can tell the culture of a place just by what's on their TVs. What I saw on the TV here is just some music video fucking thing on TV and some VJ chick throwing to videos, which is just quaint in and of itself because Canada and the US don't have music video shows anymore. Then this video comes on and it's like super hot Russian strip club hour. It's just like these super perfectly formed women with thongs and they're just like, there they are in the camera here. That's at the airport. That's just at the airport where you're just hanging out to eat a ham sandwich. They're like, thanks. Thank you, Russia. I'll take it. Like, little things like that really do say something about a culture. Like, what they think is taboo and what they don't care about. They don't care that there's hot-ass chicks rubbing their cooches in your face on TV. They like it. That's what they want. They think that's great. They want to celebrate the hotness of these Russian chicks. And you would never see that in North America in a million years. We're, you know, much more scrubbed clean or whatever, much more with just like family friendly PG in our public spaces. I also can't log on to the Wi-Fi here because you need a telephone number to get on the Wi-Fi. And this phone doesn't work as a telephone, so it can't receive SMS messages outside of Canada. So I don't know, maybe my hotel will have some fucking internet. Just tell my Airbnb people that I'll be a day late. But yeah, my flight's not till 4 o'clock tomorrow. Have another afternoon hanging out here at the fucking airport. But yeah, I like it. I like stuff like this. I just think it's fun. It's just neat. Even when I used to take the bus to New York, just hanging out at bus stations even is kind of weirdly fun. I don't know. It's weird. Transit is miserable. It's not fun, but it is fun. The spaces in between are fun. But anyway, I've been rambling long enough. What is it now? 20 after 9. I only got to make it till 10. So hopefully next time we'll have adventures from Japan. Hey, welcome to How to Write a Novel. So it seems like to get a little time away from people, to blab to myself in Tokyo, seems like a good method is to go to shrines. I was at this place, the Meiji Shrine by Yoyogi Park. Pretty busy place, pretty touristy, but even there, it's like if you just go kind of behind the shrine and go down one of the sort of access roads, there weren't that many people. So I was like, I think this could be the trick. So today, just I was by Sunshine City, the big mall near Ikebukuro Station. And it was a little windy and overcast, so I saw a subway entrance and went in, but it was some weird subway line that I don't know what it is. And it took me somewhere that I didn't know where I was. And when I came back up above ground again, I'm like, I don't know. I don't know where I am. I'm under some overpass. I don't know what's happening. And there was a sign that said, hey, major subway this way or another shrine 500 meters the other way. I forget what it's called. Starts with a G. But I was like, fuck it. Let's go check that out. Let's go see what's going on with the shrine. So I'm there right now, and it's smaller, but it's pretty nice, and yeah, there's fucking nobody here. It's a Monday afternoon, just wandering around, and it is really cool. Like, all these shrine areas, they really do feel super traditional. It's just cool. It's like I got some kind of sense of this just from Japanese video games I played as a kid, Alex Kidd games, and Spellcaster, anything on Sega Master System, basically, because they didn't really go out of their way to localize stuff that much. So, you know, I'd just be playing these games where the dude's eating a rice ball in onigiri, and I didn't know what the heck that was for years. And yeah, all these shrines and temples and stuff, they just, I don't know, that's what's kind of neat about coming here, is I didn't know what it would be like when it was all put together, because I've just seen pieces, you know, like a panel from a comic book or just a scene in an anime or even YouTube videos of people in Japan. All this stuff is contained, you know. It's like, here's what Japan looks like in a box, in a little square. So the individual pieces I've seen before. I've seen all this shrine type stuff before, for instance, but I've never seen it just around me, you know, just flowing all around. I never knew what it would be like when it's all connected. And with that sense of, like, I know where this is. I know how close it is to the city. I know what the city looks like over there. I'm aware of how many drink machines there are everywhere. It's crazy. There's so many. That's hands down, I think, the weirdest thing. Is just I knew there were drink machines, but there's so many. It's like in SimCity or something. If somebody just selected drink machine and just held down the mouse button and just started dragging the mouse all over. And it's like, just let's just squeeze them in anywhere. Anywhere that this game will allow me to squeeze one in, just squeeze it in. And that's how it feels. There's too many, way too many.
But yeah, pretty cool so far. So far, I enjoy Japan. I got some thoughts. Maybe I'll get to them this episode. Maybe I'll save those. Because today, I still want to talk about Moscow and the Moscow airport. I did a podcast from the airport last episode. And it was like kind of premature. You know, I was like, hey, this would be cool. Let me capture this little moment. Plus, I just needed something to take my mind off of the fact that I was just so exhausted and worn out and sick. And I just needed to kill a few hours. So that podcast did the job. But there was a bunch more that happened after that. So like I said last time, my flight got delayed when it left Amsterdam. So this transfer I was supposed to make in Moscow, there was no chance I wasn't going to make it. So they're like, hey, here you go. Don't worry. We'll fucking set you up with a little hotel thing. Just come back at 10 o'clock tonight. We'll sort out the hotel. And I was already getting my first tastes of just how incredibly bad the bureaucracy is in Russia. Just so slow, so unfriendly, zero customer service. Customer service-based culture. Sorry, please don't be mad. Please don't write angry reviews. Please don't tell your friends that we suck. Please come back next time. Here's money, here's an upgrade, here's an apology, here's a food voucher, here's everything. Please, here. Sorry. And from what I gathered in the Moscow airport, it's certainly, that's not a North American specific thing. There were all kinds of people from all kinds of different countries that got stranded because of this flight not connecting. Going to different places, coming from different places. And they all said, like, man, this would never happen. This has never happened anywhere else. Like, what the fuck is going on with how shitty this is? How much this Russian airline doesn't care? How much they're not looking after us? How much this all sucks? And we kind of pieced together as the evening went on. It's kind of like a lot of buck passing. It's like, you know, that idea that you can take an organization, take a business, take a company, take a country, take any group. And it's like shit runs downhill, you know, like the way the people at the top act is the way the organization acts. And unquestionably, the Russian mindset is this is not my fault. This is someone else's fault. You know, we are our little group. We kind of became a little friend group throughout the day, and we managed to break through the Russian bullshit a little bit and just get some sense of what their thought process was. And their thought process was always passing the buck. The airline was like, hey, this isn't our fault. It's that fucking airport in Amsterdam that wouldn't give us flight clearance is the only reason that we're late. And then the people at the airport are like, this isn't our fault. It's that fucking airline for getting you guys here late. And then once we finally got to this hotel, the hotel people were like, well, this isn't our fault. This is the fucking airport dumping you people on us. And it was just so clear that everyone was resentful of the other person. Everyone thought they were having to shoulder a burden that wasn't their responsibility. And it's the exact opposite of, there's this guy, Jocko Willink. He's a former Navy SEAL guy. Now he does like corporate speaking and like writes books about, you know, productivity and inspirational, get shit done, whatever. And his book is called Extreme Ownership, because he said that was kind of his biggest takeaway. What he learned being the head of these Navy SEAL guys is the exact opposite of what these Russian people were doing, is you take responsibility even though it's not your fault. Like, if he's the leader of some platoon and something goes horribly wrong, there's just no point in passing the buck. There's no point in blaming someone else. So what he learned was most effective, and what he started doing was he just took responsibility for everything. It's like, okay, this guy fucked up over here, and this led to this, and he's got this sense of the situation. And once they get all the intel and like, how come that operation failed and what happened? And he knows why. He knows it's because this guy did this and this happened here. And it's technically not his fault. But it is his fault in the sense that he is the one overseeing things. If that guy over there fucked up, it's because Jocko, as the leader, didn't clarify well enough how things were supposed to work, or wasn't careful enough in putting the right people in the right places. In a sense, it is Jocko's fault. And whether it is or it isn't, in order to move on, it's just better to take responsibility. Say, yes, this is my fault. If you want to punish somebody, I'm the man. Come punish me. But more often than not, he found that in those situations, if he deflected and he said, hey, it's not my fault, it's this guy's fault, that just makes people not trust him, not trust his whole organization. It makes them resentful of him. It makes them uncomfortable with the whole situation. They lose faith. Where when he just takes responsibility, then it allows everyone to move on. It's like, okay, that fucked up, that failed, that was something bad just happened. But that doesn't matter because time moves forward. That's over. What do we do now? What happens now? What's the next thing? And you feel so much more confident and so much more able to move forward if you trust the guy who's in charge of fixing the situation. And when the guy in charge says, yes, it's my fault, I take responsibility. This went wrong. It's my fault that it went wrong, and I'm going to make it work now. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to make this situation never happen again. And he said there are some people who just cannot do it. They just can't. There's like some kind of, I don't use ego as a bad word, you know? I think ego is important. It's good to have a strong ego, but there is, you know, there are corrupted egos or like inflated egos. There are people that have an unstable ego that just can't do that. They just cannot take responsibility. All they can do is blame someone else. All they can do is pinpoint somewhere besides themselves where a problem happened, and they refuse to take responsibility. And those people are just bad leaders, and they never will be good leaders, you know? And that's basically, if I had to put it in a nutshell, that's the feeling I got from every fucking strata of that organization at the Russian airport. Nobody was taking responsibility. Nobody felt like anything was their own personal responsibility. Nothing was their fault. It was all someone else's fault. And no one was going to go above and beyond or out of their way in any way to make things better. But at the same time, the reason that was happening was also obviously because no one was empowered at all. Like North America, we are super, super individualistic, obviously, to the point where, like, even if you watch employees at McDonald's, the people who work the front of McDonald's do not have a specific job. They're just told to do whatever needs to be done. If you watch people at McDonald's, you'll see, like, they go check on fries, they go check on the to-go orders, they make drinks, they just buzz around and do whatever needs to be done. Because the old method, which was just you work the fries, you work the drinks, you work the counter, wasn't efficient. If there was a bottleneck, everybody would just stand around and do nothing. It's way more efficient and better overall to just empower the employees to just do what needs to be done. Or that dude Tim Ferriss, the 4-Hour Workweek book. He was talking about the mail order, like, supplements and vitamins company he used to have. He felt like he had to do everything. Like, he was being more responsible if he handled everything himself. But he was just causing bottlenecks, and he was making things not flow smoothly. So he let go of the reins a little, and he, like, empowered his employees. It's like, if you have a problem, if someone has a customer service issue, if something weird is happening with shipping, anything on any level, if you can fix it for, I can't remember if it was $200 or $400, but if you say $400, if you can fix it for under $400, just do it. Don't even email me. Don't call me. Just do it, and then we'll look at it later. Keep things moving. You know, use your own judgment. Fix it however you think is the best way to fix it. And he said just the amount that everything worked better was remarkable. So again, Russia was the exact opposite. Even just that couple of days I was in Russia, unbelievable how clear it is. Like that classic Iron Curtain 1980s US versus the Soviet Union thing. The fundamental tenets of it are still true. North America is about individual empowerment, and Russia is very obviously not, because it's crazy how long it took. So we showed up at 10 o'clock. No one explained anything. Everything was crazy. Everything was weird. There were a few people like from India who couldn't speak English or Russian, and they just got fucked. There's just no one to even care a little bit about what to do with those people. And everyone else, like, it's just like, it's too boring to even recount, so I'll just burn through it. But it took from 10 p.m. to, by the time we finally got to a hotel and got rooms, it was 3:30 in the morning. And we did not move far. Like, we moved probably 150 feet through the airport. And then once we got on these buses, the hotel literally next door to the airport. From the airport, there's the hotel. From the hotel, there's the airport. They're right next to each other. And it took hours because we would just slowly move to some security check. We had to get Russian visas just to go to this hotel, even though the hotel was like a lockdown. The hotel, we could not leave. We could not, like, I don't know what would happen if there was a goddamn fire, because, like, the front doors won't open. We weren't allowed to leave our floor. But even just to get to that point, it was so slow. At every little stage, all this fucking physical paperwork would have to be checked and checked and checked. And it's like, I guess it's just that you can't get in trouble for saying no, you know? So everyone just wants to say no. No, 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 until every little meticulous thing has been checked over and over and over, and everyone has agreed, okay, this is definitely okay, now we'll move to the next step. And that happened 18 times and took hours, and it was just unbelievable. It's like, how is this the 21st century? How is this the modern world? And it really felt like an infantilized society, you know? Like, these people, they just felt like little kids trying to act serious. No one could be friendly. No one could be personable, of course. Everyone was scared all the time. It's like they're scared that dad is going to yell at them. They're scared that something's going to go wrong. And even though this obviously happened fucking daily with that stupid airport, they all acted like it had never happened before. There was no protocol for it. There's no way to handle this. So fucking slow. And it's one thing if it's just like, hey, I'm just some dick who wanted a cheap flight, you know? Okay, so I got fucked, whatever. There were plenty of douchebag travelers like me that, you know, how much sympathy can you have for us? But there were people with kids, and the kids are just like falling asleep and crying, and they're just stuck in this shitty fucking corner of the airport where there's just like empty liquor bottles. Like, it was an underpass, but this was in an airport behind a security check. How are there empty liquor bottles there? You know? What a shitty country. What a fucked up place. And the little kid thing is what really brought it into just sharp relief of, like, these people can't do anything or won't do anything. You know, like, if anyone should have been expedited, it's the fucking families with kids. Just get them on this stupid fucking bus. In any other country, this whole thing would have taken at worst 2 hours. And instead it took like 5.5. It's just unbelievable. And I don't know. Again, I don't know. What else is there to say? It was fucking ridiculous. It was just bullshit. Thank Christ that, you know, as I was saying last time, I was having pretty bad diarrhea problems that day. Thank fucking God that they had more or less sorted out for the day at that point, because it just couldn't have been more of a nightmare. And I heard, I never thought to look at reviews or anything of the airport or the airline, because, like, why would I? I just never even thought of it. But somebody mentioned to me, like, yeah, I did see lots of bad reviews. And now I know why. Or, like, when people were first arriving at the airport, just, like, the desperation in their faces, their, like, sweaty faces and their wide eyes of, like, really rushing to get to their next flight, which is not something you normally see in an airport, because everything is, it's modern, it's the modern age, everything moves pretty smooth, everything's all pretty cool. Not at that airport. And this dude I was talking to, he's like, now I know why. Now I know why they had that look. Holy shit. Because you just get caught in fucking bureaucracy nightmareville. So what was cool, though, is physically, you know, I was in bad shape, but other than that, I was pretty much the prime candidate for this type of horrible, dumb bullshit to happen to. Because I wasn't in a hurry, you know, I had 47 days or whatever booked here in
Tokyo at the cheapest possible hostel I could find. So who cares if I miss a day? Who gives a shit? And I just spent like a month in Amsterdam by myself, heading out here to Tokyo where I don't know anybody, you know. Next month, my friend Brad's coming to visit for like a weekend, but a lot of alone time, a lot of solo travel. So this whole thing was fun in that sense, because it was like my chance to just kind of hang out. Like, it was like a weird sleepover, like we're all just stuck in like the worst summer camp in the world. And I kind of moved my way up the chain, where on the flight to Moscow, there was like an older Dutch guy who, I don't remember his name because it was a very Dutch name. And we just kind of blabbed about whatever for a little bit. But at least, you know, but then he missed his flight. He was going to Thailand, I think. So I saw him and I'm like, oh, hey, look, there's a guy I know. So that's cool. At least there's some guy that I know. And then at the 10 o'clock time when we were first waiting for our hotels, little did we know we were still 5 or 6 hours away from what should have been a half-hour journey. I saw a dude who, he was right before me at the little counter where they told me I was never going to catch my flight. But he was right in front of me. He was the guy who got told, hey, maybe you'll have to stay in a capsule or whatever in the hotel stuff. So I was like, oh, that's that guy. So he's also stranded. So we were just standing there not knowing what the fuck was going on with the hotel situation. So I just said, like, hey, I guess we learned our lesson about transferring in Moscow, right? And we got blabbing. His name was Lawrence. He's also Dutch. I can't remember where he was going to. Maybe he was going to Thailand. Maybe everyone was going to Thailand. I don't know. But yeah, he was in his mid-20s. He's a video game dude. Like how last episode I mentioned that game Papers, Please. He brought that up independently. He's like, you ever play that game, Papers, Please? Like, that's what this is like. And I was like, dude, nice. We will not have a hard time hanging out. We will not have a hard time finding things to talk about. Because that's kind of a deep cut. You have to be a pretty big video game nerd to know Papers, Please. So yeah, that was cool. We talked about fucking traveling around and Dutchness and the insanity of Moscow or whatever. And then as the day fucking dragged on, in the endless lines and waiting and stand here. Literally at one point they were like, go down these stairs. Oh, come back up the stairs. Okay, back down the stairs. And it's just like, oh my fucking God. But in the midst of all that, I met this dude who I'm pretty sure he was from Australia. He lived in The Hague in the Netherlands, but he wasn't Dutch. But he could speak Dutch. His girlfriend was Dutch. Well, I'll get into this with his girlfriend in India and stuff. It's kind of cool. But that's the dude who saved the day, for sure. Where he just, you know, he's like tanned, kind of cool. He was closer to my age. And he just seemed like the kind of guy who knows how to marshal a party. You know, this guy just knows how to connect people and how to fucking make a fun time happen. I found out later his name was Valentine. I had to ask him, because that's the other weird thing. It's like you're just hanging out with people and talking to them, but nobody actually knows anybody's names or whatever. And maybe he doesn't give his name readily. He's like, yeah, my name's Valentine. I was like, for real? He's like, yeah, that's my real name. But what was cool with that dude is so when we finally got to this hotel and we're still just stuck in the hotel and we're just lined up in the fucking hallway while they sort out rooms for people and all this fucking, again, checking every piece of paperwork and triplicate and quadruplicate and just over and over and just so fucking slow and awful. And at that point, I was just finally really just out of steam. I was just slumped against the wall. I was just like, oh my God, what the fuck? Like, I just got nothing left in me. What the fuck is this? Oh, that's how ridiculous it got, too, actually. These people from Brazil ahead of me in line. This took so long that by the time we got there at 3:30 in the morning, they literally had to go back. They didn't even check into the room. They just were like immediately like, we got to get back on those buses and go back. Our flight's leaving pretty soon. Like, and that's something I think is a great little... this is a great litmus test for how ridiculous something is, how ridiculous a society is as long as you can parody something, you know, as long as you can make a joke about something, then it's not irredeemable, you know? It's like, it's still somewhere within the realm of reality. But if something gets so ridiculous that you can't, you know, because, I mean, a joke is just exaggerating something, right, for comedic effect. If you can't exaggerate something anymore, that's when you're at the end of the line, man. Something really needs to change. Like when your overnight hotel thing at the airport takes so long and is so slow and so inefficient that as soon as you get there, you have to go right back. That's the sketch. That's the joke. You know, you cannot get more ridiculous than that. It's not possible. That's the end of the line. It was so slow that as soon as you get there, you got to go back. Like I was thinking, like if I wrote a sketch about a mall in the Netherlands that didn't have a bathroom, and the joke is that everyone's at the mall and they're like, where's the bathroom? How is there no bathroom? But that wouldn't be a joke. That would be factually accurate. That's how it really was where I stayed. And like, how do you parody that? How do you take that a step further? You know, you can't do it without going into straight absurdism of like, you get to the mall and they inject more shit into you or something. Like, you're at the end of the line. This can't get sillier. And when you hit that point, things gotta change. That's when there's no more like, oh, it's just my culture. Oh, it's just how it is. No, it's fucking stupid and it needs to change. Like, you've just hit maximum fucking, what's that called when you've hit terminal velocity? This can't get dumber. This is at 100% dumb. You know? Like, that needs to be like a ministry in the government or something. It's like, let's just look around at our various laws and, all right, this one's weird, that one's fucked up, this is some weird shit we've just always done, whatever. But if we find one that is so dumb it can't even be parodied anymore, that's the thing that needs to change. That is too dumb to exist. So anyway, I was fucking out of it. I'm like, I just cannot believe how long this took. But I'm finally at this fucking hotel, and it's like, oh, god damn it, I'm just about to die. And of course, what I should have done is just gone and went to bed. But my flight wasn't until like 6:30 the next day. So even though I was way out of it, this dude Valentine, who, like I said, he knows how to rock the party, he came out of some side room. He found me slumped in the fucking hallway, and he's like, hey, buddy. We asked them where we could smoke, and they put us over here in this smoking room. And now we're having a party. We cracked some liquor. Come on in. Come to the party room. I was like, Valentine, you son of a bitch. All right, you got me. And this was the thing that even though I was still, like, sick, and I knew the next day the flight was going to be long and bad and whatever, but it's like, fuck it, man. This day has been so shitty. And I'm just flying off tomorrow to somewhere where I don't know anybody. And this Valentine dude is really cool and fun to hang out with. Let's go to the party room and let's just see what's happening. So it was Valentine and his girlfriend, who is Dutch, but as they discussed and got into, is definitely of Indian descent, like from India. This pair of girls who were from India, who vaguely knew each other, like they'd been to school together like 10 years before and happened to be on this flight together. And also this married couple from India who'd just gotten married. I think they were on their like honeymoon thing right now. And they had cracked open this bottle of some kind of Canadian club. I don't remember what kind it was, some special kind that was really good, that they were cutting with water. And I was like, I shouldn't really, like, man, I'm not going to be able to sleep. It's got a big flight tomorrow. I shouldn't drink too much of this, but started drinking. And they started showing us videos of their wedding, which is one of those crazy ass weddings from India that's like 3 days long. And they said it costs like something like 250,000 euros, you know, like a quarter of a million for this wedding, because it was just like every person they'd ever fucking met, you got to put them all up in a hotel. These videos were amazing, like professionally shot, professionally edited with music. It was like a series of like three music videos about their wedding, and it was just cool as fuck. We're watching their wedding, we're drinking. We realized that this Canadian club was like good enough that it's like, fuck the water. Who needs to mix it with water? We just started drinking it. And again, I was trying to resist. I'm like, I know it's not going to be a good idea. But the guy's like, hey, man, I already opened it. It's like this liter of this shit. We got to drink it today or what are we going to do? So I just started drinking. And also, it was just like, fuck it. You know, when else am I going to be in this situation? I'm just in some weird Russian hotel where we're not allowed to leave. Guys keep coming in and checking on us in their suits and their frowny faces. And just hanging out with people. And the more I got drinking, you know, it was just like fun to talk and just easier to integrate with the group or whatever. And yeah, it was so interesting about... So this dude, Valentine's girlfriend, I don't remember any of their names because these were like legit India names, you know? Like they were like, hey, Canadian, right? There's a lot of Indian people in Canada, right? And I was like, yeah, you know, Lily Singh, right? And they're all like, yay. But yeah, in Canada, we don't have like the hardcore India names. But this girl, Valentine's girlfriend, did have like a hardcore India name. And they were going through like, here's her mom's name, here's her uncle's name. And the people from India were like, oh yeah, those are all super traditional names. Like that's my grandpa's name or whatever. But in the Netherlands, even though they're Indian or half Indian, you know, visually you're like, all right, that person's from India. All the names are from India, but they don't culturally identify as Indian. They didn't, like this girl didn't really know she was Indian. And it's just like this overwhelming evidence of like everything you're saying is so Indian. All these names, all these touchstones, all this cultural stuff. And it's just so interesting that it's from like, you know, the Dutch's colonial past. There's a lot of black people that live in the Netherlands too. And they're just disconnected now. They're just disconnected from where they came from. And it's just neat. It was interesting. It's interesting to learn weird stuff like that. Like, where else would I ever learn it? And kind of the coolest point was, so, you know, we were all drinking and getting drunker and drunker. And at one point I sat down on this cheap-ass Russian chair and the chair just broke. And we all just died laughing at this chair that broke. And the Russian fucking local security guy came in, gave us the mean mug of just like, what is happening? What is all this laughing? Why aren't you people asleep? And he's just like, you could tell he was a little annoyed that I broke the chair, but... It's obvious that I didn't break the chair. I'm just a little skinny-ass fucking skin and bones dude. It's just your shitty chair, your shitty Russian chair fucking broke. We wore that guy down a little bit by the end of the evening. Just like, Valentine did specifically, of just like, finally the guy kind of threw us a little smile at one point. You know, it's like we finally wore him down. But yeah, as I was drinking and hanging out, I mean, I don't know that much about Indian culture. But this thing came back to me from years ago. Suddenly the power of drinking unlocked this in my brain of way back in the early 2000s. This must have been like 2001, I'm going to guess. In those early days of the internet, there was this video floating around. It's this guy, Dalar Mendy. It was this song, Tunak Tunak Tun. And it was like a little viral hit back then, mainly because it was kind of ridiculous. You know, it was like he's this kind of overweight dude. He's wearing traditional Indian clothes, but in the video, there was like 5 copies of him with like bad 2000 special effects, each wearing a different color of the robes, like a red one, a green one, a blue one. And they all did the little dances to this song, and they kept giving these like little glances at each other. Like one of them would do some little dance, and the other one would give this little like, ah, ha, ha. I don't know how to describe the look, like, oh, you, you know? And it was famous, I didn't tell them this, but it was famous because it was silly. You know, it was a very silly video. But I did legitimately like it. I listened to that song a bunch of times. So I brought that up. I'm like, hey, wait a sec. Like, I just had this weird brainstorm, like, do you guys know the song Tunak Tunak Tun? And everyone was just like, yeah! And they brought it up on their phone, and it's this fucking tunak tunak dun tunak tunak dun tunak tunak dun da da da. And we're just like, I don't know the words, but I can sing it, you know, like phonetically, I can kind of. Like I know the song, right? So we fucking pulled that up, and we all just sang along to that song. Not Valentine and his girlfriend, they didn't know it, but everyone from India knew this song. And like that made the whole thing. That made the whole night. Like just that moment of just like, I'm in Russia with a bunch of people from India and we're all singing Tunak Tunak Tun back in 2001 when like me and my friends in New Brunswick were just like, look at this silly video. Like I never could have known it would pay off like that, you know, all those years later. It was just awesome. But yeah, we drank way too much. We drank the whole bottle. And again, this is where that dude Valentine is just good at modulating the party, you know? Because they were tempted to open another bottle, and he's like, no, no, look, that bottle's not getting open. Like, suddenly party dad became real dad, where he's like, do not open that. That is not opening. And then when the sun started to come up, we'd see the gray shitball fucking Russian, you know, view out the window. He was the one that's like, it's bedtime now. We got to go to bed. We got to wrap this up because everybody else, once we got into the party vibe, we would have just kept going forever. But yeah, he was like, he arranged the party. He set up the party. I'm really thankful that he came and got me, you know, that he came and pulled me in. But then when it was over, he's like, also, party's over. Everybody fucking go to your rooms. But it was so fun, like even in that night, we were talking about like, wouldn't it be great if we all took a trip to India and just all hung out there? Like, it's so fun to hang out in this hotel room in Russia. What if we all hung out in India? That'd be cool. And it's not even so crazy. I mean, it's totally a thing that could happen. But I mean, as if, of course that's not going to happen. That would just be weird. But in the moment, like it was a nice little... It's one of those things, it's like a nice thing to say. It's a nice validation that like, yeah, we're all having a good time. We're all pretty cool. We're having an all right time right now. We've made the best out of this dumb situation. But then I fucking got back to my little hotel room. It was just like, I don't know where this dude was from. He spoke a little bit English, not much, but the dude had the big respirator. The dude had like sleep apnea, so it's just weird. I'm like going into this room with some roommate I've been assigned, and he's got his big machine hooked up to him, and he doesn't know who the fuck I am. I'm just like, sorry, don't worry about me. But then I also realized like just how much I had drunk when I laid my head down on the pillow and closed my eyes, and it just felt like my head was still moving. Like, do you ever get that feeling where it's like your head's in a cycle of just like being 2 feet above the bed and down and up and down and up and down and up and down. And it just feels like you're an elastic. You're just yo-yoing up and down. It's just like, oh no, fuck me. So I didn't sleep that well. Woke up way too early. Then still just ended up dicking around the stupid hotel all afternoon because the 2 o'clock bus to take us back to the airport didn't, of course, they didn't get their shit together until like 3:45. This one Dutch girl in our group was really starting to lose her shit, and I can't blame her. She's like, I'm gonna miss my other flight. Like, this can't happen again. This is not gonna happen again. Just get us on the bus. Like, what is wrong with you? And again, I just really felt like, I wish I could feel pity for these Russian people or empathy or something. I just can't because they were fucking everyone around so bad. But it was totally... just an infantilized society, like just absolutely like a bunch of little kids that have just been hit and they just can't do anything. And they're just trying to mask their emotions and they're just trying not to fuck up. And in doing so, they're fucking up all the time, constantly, driving everyone crazy, completely ineffectual, terrible at everything they're trying to do, completely frustrating. But presumably everybody made it to their planes on time. Mine was the latest to leave, and I had about an hour, once everything was said and done, to just fucking dick around and wait at the gate. So I think it was probably a pretty tight call for everybody else, but I assume they made it. I know the people from India made it, because they left in the morning. So that was the Russian tale, and then just the flight, again, like a 9.5-hour flight. Very, very absurdly bad. I got an aisle seat, so that was good, just because, again, drinking all night did not help my situation with my stomach and stuff. Mostly, though, I think my stomach problems were mostly over. My hangover problems should have been worse, like when I was on the bus going back to the hotel. with Valentine and his girlfriend the next day, we were saying, like, God, we're all hungover and shit. But then as we thought about it a little more, it's like, that really was high-quality liquor, because we should be feeling worse than we are. We drank so much hard liquor. We didn't feel great, but we should have been feeling way worse than that. And then on the flight, I started developing a distinct sore throat and sickness that then dogged me into this first week in Japan. But I made it, and the one thing I want to say about that flight, it was one of those cases where I couldn't really fall asleep. I just felt like I was, you know, I'd put in my headphones, like earplugs, pull down my hat over my eyes, and just sit there and just try to... It's almost like it's mentally tough when you can't fall asleep, but you're just trying to sleep, to just sit there for hours and hours and hours and just try to soak it in and try to convince yourself, like, this is almost as good as sleep. This is still rest. You know, it's mentally taxing because I can't quite seem to fall asleep. But at least I'm resting, and I just got to soak up as much of this as I can. And obviously I did kind of drift in and out at some point. It's not like I just sat there for 9.5 hours. But it's one of those times when it just never felt like I was sleeping, you know? And then toward the end of the flight, when there was about 1.5 hours to go, I had soaked in as much sleep as I possibly could. I finally, when the lady came by giving out drinks, I finally got a coffee. And I was like, hey, can I get a coffee? And I hadn't had a coffee in a couple of days. I'm a low-level coffee addict, so I was already, like, I felt so underground, you know, like 90 feet underground, where I was definitely getting sick. I didn't really feel like I properly slept at all. And even just not drinking coffee, I think, contributed to that. But I got this coffee, put in some sugar, put in some cream, the worst coffee in the world, but just drank it, and then went to the bathroom. And I honestly think that's the best coffee I ever had in my life. Like, I kind of approach coffee sort of medicinally a lot, of like, it's just what I need to kind of get my day going and stuff. Like, I definitely got a low-level dependence on caffeine. But man, I've never gone from, it's like, so all that just feeling like I was underwater and just feeling so blah and just no energy. But drinking that coffee not only gave me the normal coffee boost, it gave me the additional boost of clearing up the fact that I hadn't had any coffee in a couple of days. So it wiped out the extra bad feelings of caffeine withdrawal. But it also felt like it unlocked that sleep I had done, all that rest that I had been trying desperately to scrabble together during the flight and just didn't seem like it had helped at all. That coffee, it's like it unlocked all that. It's like that floodgate opened and it gave me that. And I was just standing in the bathroom looking in the mirror and I'm like, in 90 minutes I'm going to be in Japan. I'm almost there. I made it. I made it through all this fucking shit. And it's just like, that was the... I guess the best coffee is the wrong way to put it because it tasted like shit, but the most valuable coffee I have ever had in my life. Like, it just saved me. I felt so much better. And then the fucking plane got there and I got down to Japan. And after a month of just the kind of odd aloofness of Dutch people and like, hey, if you get run over by a bicycle, it's your own fault and just, you know, whatever. They're not the worst, but they're not the best. And then the Russians, who are the worst, so unfriendly, so shitty. I got to Japan, and right away, people are just nice. They're just friendly. They're accommodating. It seemed like, hey, thanks for coming to Japan. You know, even when I told the lady at like customs that I was going to be in Tokyo, and then I was going to Fukuoka, which I think she doesn't hear very often, because I'd never heard of Fukuoka before Brad moved there. So I think that lady is like, I don't know if anyone's ever said to her that they're going to Fukuoka, because she's just like that sort of theatrical, like, funny. It's this really funny reaction where she's just like, what? Like, what? Fukuoka? Like, the opposite of these stern fucking... This was the customs lady, too, of just like, in Russia, she would have been, you know, acting like she was made out of metal. Like she was part tank. in Japan, she was just like, whoa, Fukuoka, right on. Well, have fun, buddy. Here you go. Stamp, stamp. Go have fun, my friend. You know, and I was like, this is amazing. This is so much better. And yeah, I'm sure I'll have thoughts and stuff, especially as I'm here longer. I mean, I'm always creeped out by collectivism and culture. Like when people say like, oh, I love traveling to see other cultures. Like, I think that's where there's a big disconnect for me is to me, culture is like a bad word. Culture is just everybody acting the same. And that's not a good thing. That's a scary thing. That's a pod people thing. But if your culture is going to guide you in a direction, at least here in Japan, it's guiding people in the direction of being cool and being friendly and being nice. I'm sure if you live here and you got a mortgage and you got to deal with bureaucracy and stuff, I'm sure that's not fun. If you get arrested by the Japanese police, I'm sure that's not fun. But on a very surface level, man, it's so much more fun than these other fucking places. Way better. It's like, whew, man. Good stuff. Good stuff. I think I'm going to leave this shrine, but hey, man, this is cool. Cheers to you, shrine. This was a good place to walk around and talk to myself.